Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Greta. I enjoyed reading your paper. It's very well written, but of course I will have some comments, maybe mainly complimentary comments. Firstly, the main impression is that you try to outline the relationship between the welfare state the policies, the Nordic model of the welfare state, and control policies, but I find the paper being more about welfare states than about migration control. Your chapter also evokes a related question, which you also alluded to. Why is the Nordic welfare state model so important for Scandinavian control policies compared to migration control in other liberal states, for example, European welfare states such as the Netherlands, or Germany, or France? I would argue that the Nordic welfare state model on its own cannot explain the large difference that you have described between Swedish control policies and Danish control policies. I leave Norway aside because that's in between, as you mentioned. So I think that if we add a dimension which is the securitization, this might be one of several additional factors that need to be taken into account and could also explain better the differences between Denmark and Sweden. Also in reference to the overall analytical framework of this book, the editors present a model with four aspects, arguing that security, culture, economy and rights are the four factors that drive immigration control policy. In comparing a larger number of liberal states, it is important to assess how the welfare state fits in within such an analytical scheme. So my suggestion would be that the welfare states are constrained both by security slash culture, as the securitization framework, and economy slash rights, which is this liberal paradox that Jim has referred to many times. Greta describes the welfare state as not only for economic redistribution, but also as a moral construct for institutionalized solidarity, equal treatment, and nation building. And you also highlight social rights for integration and equal access to these rights for legal residents. And welfare state policies in this way should cater for the whole population, and large-scale immigration may challenge social security institutions. And this is what we saw happening in Sweden in 2015. It was overwhelmed by 165,000 asylum seekers, including 35,000 unaccompanied minors, where municipalities in Sweden gave themselves up to the authorities, saying that we cannot deliver, we cannot follow the regulations because we don't have the resources. But in general, I would question the ideal welfare state that you explain, and you have a historical approach. I'm more focusing on specific bits and pieces of that, and I'm also questioning whether welfare states of the Nordic model cannot actually differentiate and exclude migrants. And after all, we have seen substantial cuts in the welfare states starting from the early 90s with economic crisis situations, which differ much from the 70s that you outlined as a historical background. And this might, of course, also have had consequences on solidarity, legitimacy, and trust. And the link between nation building and redistribution of resources within the welfare state system thus raises the issue of how natives react to immigration in defense of their welfare state system. Putnam, for example, has studied this relationship between immigration, ethnic diversity, and social trust, and find that there might be a reduced willingness for redistribution of support for the welfare state. But this also depends on the interactions, what kind of interactions natives have with immigrants, which could moderate this sense and attitude, and could also reduce threat perceptions. In my written comments, I refer to one recent study which shows the negative views regarding immigration, that they are correlated with negative attitudes towards immigrants. But you have smaller effects both when the natives feel culturally closer to the immigrants and when the latter originate in richer countries. Also, there are links between the level of education of both the natives and the immigrants. More educated natives are in favor of more redistribution if immigrants are also relatively well educated. So now the question about securitization. There is often a nationalistic security-oriented flavor linked to ethnic diversity, and public opinion is, as you outlined, clearly linked to party politics and the politics of securitization. And we have a very large literature on securitization, which you might want to refer to a little bit more. And the famous Copenhagen School argued that for a state, survival is about sovereignty, but for a nation, it's about identity. So we have the dimension of cultural identity linked to nationalism and the nationalist parties, the right-wing populist parties. But securitization is often strategically, socially constructed, and this, I think, could be interesting to look also at the case between Denmark and Sweden, how that plays out. You mentioned something about the terminology used, the kindness, or the kindism, which was prevalent in Norway and Denmark, but it's entering the debate in Sweden since the last 5 years. We had a very extensive debate in Sweden since the election in 2014, where media started to become self-critical. This was also a way to explain the success of the Sweden Democrats. How come so many people voted for them? And media ended up criticizing themselves for being too kind and too generous, not really taking seriously the big challenges of unemployment and exclusion, crime rates, etc. One example is the Prime Minister Reinfeldt, who criticized his migration minister Billström for using the word volumes. At that time, you couldn't even criticize or mention what is the capacity for Sweden in terms of volumes and the inflow. And as a version of Merkel's Wir schaffen das in 2015, the Swedish Prime Minister said, open your hearts at the election campaign in the summer of 2014. But the Conservative Party then lost in a big way. Sweden Democrats gained. So many of the mainstream parties in Norway and Denmark, they have adopted the language and terminology used by right-wing political parties, but this is a new issue in Sweden. But this doesn't necessarily mean cooperation with the right-wing populists. So the difference that you mentioned is quite strong, that Sweden chose to isolate the Sweden Democrats, but this is also because the populist party, Sweden Democrats, has a background in fascist and neo-Nazi movements, unlike populist parties in Norway and Denmark. One explanation of this is the Danish socio-cultural conflict dimension compared to the Swedish socio-economic conflict dimension. I think also comparing to the editor's analytical framework, this fits quite nicely with the security culture on the Danish side and the liberal paradox on the Swedish side. I also have a question for you. I mentioned in my written comments that could we consider that the Nordic welfare state is under a crisis situation, as we now have a permanent crisis in terms of migration management and migration control? That would be interesting to hear your ideas about. How much time do I still have?
Not much.
So you describe first the external control dimension and second the internal control dimension, which I think we could allude to as, yeah, as the integration control.
Yeah.
Because that's linked to equality and welfare rights, which are of key importance to sustainable integration policies. And there, I think Sweden is an outlier, because it's almost a puzzle to explain how come Sweden didn't react earlier to the relatively large inflows of immigrants especially of a humanitarian character, neither by external border controls, nor by internal immigration control or access to citizenship and welfare provisions. All the Scandinavian countries have introduced more and more restrictive policies. In the Swedish case, it was after the 2015 crisis, alluding to the minimum level of the European Union, that Sweden stood out as the only country for a while that accepted Syrian asylum seekers as refugees on a permanent basis, and then switched to temporary protection. And these restrictions have at the same time been combined with liberalizing regulations in terms of labor migration. And this is in line with a lot of recent quantitative research as well, that we have both a restrictive side and a more liberal side, which would confirm the liberal paradox. I don't have time now, but in my written comments I also relate a bit to the inability to control and to achieve regulated immigration. And one example is the Swedish policy of dual messages, the symbolic politics of allowing paperless people in Sweden to have access to education and healthcare. And this is very actively promoted by the government, but it of course sends dual signals to the rest of the world. And we also have very clear indications of that exclusion and marginalization is accepted. So this is somehow weakening the argument about the Swedish welfare state, that it's very strong and trying to integrate everybody. We have a very large exclusion in Sweden. For example, also relating to the internal EU mobility, where the Social Democrats, who traditionally have been more restrictive in terms of immigration, but in relation to Romanian and Bulgarian internal movers within the EU, who get their income by begging in the streets, the Social Democrats are very accepting. So how can we explain this in terms of this inclusionary welfare state approach? So finally, I would like to summarize my conclusions that the threats and risks associated with immigration and the welfare state are often portrayed in a securitizing way, more so in Denmark than in Sweden. The Nordic welfare states are in a crisis where rollbacks have resulted in exclusion and marginalization. This trend may pose a challenge to the legitimacy of the system through weakening social trust, also in the light of large-scale immigration over the past decades. In order to regard the Nordic welfare state model as a special case among liberal welfare states, we need further research that could explain the notable differences that have evolved in comparison between the Danish and the Swedish cases. And the key aspect might be that these two countries have followed different dynamics in relation to security culture and securitization and economy rights, the liberal paradox. Thank you.